Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope, and I'm your host, Rory Hearn, and I'm delighted to be joining the podcast today for a special on homelessness, what can be done, what's going on. I'm joined by Wayne Stanley, who is the head of policy and research at Simon Communities of Ireland, and also by Alicia Nealon, who is a journalist with Dublin Inquirer. And just before we start, we want to put a shout out to the Simon Communities, who do absolutely amazing work in terms of both highlighting policy solutions on homelessness. And we're going to talk about that today in terms of one proposal going forward this week, we hope, in the Dáil. And also do great work in terms of prevention of homelessness, supporting individuals, but also then providing services as well. So if you can, go over to Simon Community, simon.ie, and you can go find out your local Simon community and support and donate if you can. We would really appreciate that. I'm going to go to you first, Wayne. I know you've a bill this week going through the Dáil, and I also have an article that I wrote for the Examiner this morning, which is out, which really goes through, I suppose, the disturbing rise in homelessness over the last 3 or 4 months. And in particular, I was looking at some of the figures around, even around the country, you know, a 25% rise in children and families homeless in the Southwest and Southeast. And of course, the big factor, the big issue, the significant increase in evictions, of eviction notices served to people in the private rental sector, rising in the last two quarters of this year to almost reaching 900 people served with eviction notices in the private rental. And very important to point out that 90% of those eviction notices are for no-fault eviction. That means it is because the landlord is deciding to sell the property, move a family member in, refurbish it. It is nothing the tenant has done themselves. Wayne, you have, and I'm going to read that article after we talk to, I talk to Wayne and Alicia, read it out, and I do put a call in it for the government to reintroduce a temporary six-month moratorium on evictions, given what is happening and the pandemic rising again. And I'll get your view on that, Wayne. But I also make the point that what you have done this week and done incredible work on is putting forward a motion, which has been put forward in the Dáil, I understand, by opposition parties, to essentially, if someone is facing potential homelessness or at risk of homelessness in the private rental sector and have been given a notice to quit by the landlord, that there should be, if they do face homelessness, there should be a three-month extension to that notice and supports called in terms of from homeless organizations and local authorities. Is that correct? Maybe you could explain it, Wayne, in terms of what has been proposed.
Yeah, so maybe the easiest way to explain it is give you a bit of the history. So you'll know this because you followed the numbers, but over the period in 2020, when the moratorium on evictions came in and there was a real sort of person-centered support around keeping people safe, what we saw was a big reduction in homelessness, particularly family homelessness. So the moratorium on eviction preventing people from coming in, and you had the work of local authorities and NGOs to either capture some of that Airbnb properties, or local authorities started to allocate, particularly to people who were in homelessness, and get them out. And that saw a big reduction in homelessness over that year. We kind of monitored that, not kind of, we did monitor that over that period. And we looked at, okay, what worked? And clearly the moratorium on evictions was a big, big part of it. So we started working probably on the bill even at that point, at sort of the end of 2020. Yeah. As we came into 2021, the moratorium was lifted and we saw an immediate sort of gradual increase, and then it was brought back in again and we saw the number stabilize and start to go back down again. About 5 months ago, the moratorium on evictions were lifted. Society started to open up again. And for those 5 months, we've consistently seen an increase in homelessness. For the last month alone, there was an extra 300 people in homelessness. That's a 4% increase in a single month. And I think what happened then was there was a number of opposition TDs who were reaching out to us at that point. Obviously, during October and end of October into November, we have Simon Week, and we produced this bill at that point and asked our supporters of Simon to write to their TDs asking them support of it. A number of the TDs got in contact with us and were very supportive of it. as the latest numbers came out, and particularly before that, I know you mentioned that in your article, our locked out report previous to that showed a real tightening in the private rental market. And it is, as you've said, from the private rental market that people are being pushed in. So I think that
report that report, I was quite struck by that in terms of, again, that change that, you know, the rental supply of affordable housing is essentially just gone.
It seems to drop off a cliff. It was really shocking. And I think what has been shocking as well is the rate of increase in homelessness. I think we all thought when the moratorium on evictions was lifted that we would see increases in homelessness, that it was going to put additional pressure on people, and that there would be some of those people would be forced into homelessness. I don't think anybody anticipated the level of increases that we're currently seeing.
So
what this bill does is it takes its inspiration from that, from the success that we had over that period with the moratorium. And what it looks at, so what we would regularly see, and this has been throughout my 15 years of working in the area of homelessness, what you see is people who've been given a perfectly valid notice to quit. They are actively seeking an alternative home. A lot of them will find an alternative home, but some people won't. And it gets down to the last week and they realize they're in a crisis. And then they're looking at, so what a lot of people do is they look for the friend that they can stay with because they think it's only going to be for an extra week or an extra 2 weeks. We'll find somewhere. But some people don't have that backup and they're presenting to their local authority or they're presenting to a Simon community, but we only have a week. And too many of those people end up in homelessness. They haven't crossed the threshold of a homeless service. And I've seen firsthand working with our service, I've seen how resilient people are, but also the impact of the trauma of having to cross the threshold of a homeless service. And that's true for single people, but if you're holding your child's hand when you're doing it, it really is devastating. And again, I've seen people who've moved on, are doing really well, and they come back, and just that trauma reemerges just from visiting the place that they're back to. So it really is, it's really quite intense. And we can prevent that, and I think we should. And what this bill does, what it does is two things. One is it gives that extension that you talk about, but the important break that's there as well is that it puts the person directly in contact with their local authority and by extension with the other support networks that's there. And I know you've had our colleagues on from Threshold on a regular basis, and the work that they do in prevention is really bearing results. The local authorities do lots of good work. Organizations like Simon around the country are doing that work every day. But we need a little bit more time, particularly in such a tight market, to divert people away from homelessness. And that's what this bill does. It does the two things we needed to do. One is it gives us a bit more time. And two is it links people in with the supports that they need. So, the argument that's been put to me a little bit is, what effect will it have on the market, or would landlords feel aggrieved by it? And the thing that I would say to that is my experience is landlords are as offended by the homeless crisis as anybody else. They don't feel they're responsible for it. So, but what we're asking for here is just a bit more time in a time of crisis and a bit of forbearance from landlords to help us to prevent people from that trauma. And I don't think that's an unrealistic or too high an ask.
Yeah, no, I think it's a very reasonable measure. Obviously, it's still in a way, it's dependent on those people who are facing that eviction to then contact, I assume, the local authority or, homeless organization. So it's still, it's a challenge around that. But at least if the person makes contact.
It's important to say it's not a panacea. I mean, we all know the answer to homelessness is a home, and the answer will be increased supply of affordable housing, cost rental, local authority, social housing. I mean, that is the answer to homelessness. What this does is will help to bridge the gap. The other thing is, I mean, there's a number of moving parts to this as well. The bill won't work on its own, as you rightly say. What we'll need is we'll need people to be aware of their entitlement. We'll need to be aware that they can present to their local authority if they're under that kind of pressure. We'll need agencies pointing them in that direction. But that happens in time. That happens, and it can happen quite quickly if we make people aware of it. The RTB is there, and people don't understand it, but they know they can go there. These things, as you say, it's not right that we put that pressure on the person who's in crisis. But in the absence of other options, at least giving them some outlet, I think, is really important.
No, I agree completely. It's more just pointing out that it will require that notification. And do you have any sense from government, are they going to implement this, support it?
I don't have a firm indication. As I say, we launched this, we developed it at the end of 2020. We launched it during Simon Week in 2021. And now the opposition has come together to present it, to launch it in the Dáil, and it'll be debated, as you say, tomorrow. As part of that process, we have been in contact with the department and the minister's office. I know it's under consideration. I suppose what this helps us to do is to push it to the top of the list of things that have to be done. And I think in the context of the increases in homelessness and the state of the private rental market, I think that's where it needs to be. So we'll see. I haven't had word yet about how they're going to respond to it. We'll see. But I think what's been interesting when I've engaged with the opposition TDs, one of the reasons they've done it is because they want to do something about homelessness. But the other reason is this is what they're seeing in their constituency offices. For all of our, we might give out about the parish pump nature of our politics sometime, but one of the things that the advantage of it is that people, they do get in contact with people on the ground and they do see that level of crisis. And even in the context of when I invited all the spokespeople to come and meet to discuss whether we could bring this bill forward, there was a number of them who said, yeah, there was actually one who said to me, look, actually, I'm fully supportive. I actually have to jump off this meeting now because I have to go and meet somebody who's in exactly the situation that you're talking about. So they are seeing it firsthand in their clinics. I think that's why we've been able to build that coalition around it.
Yeah. No, people have contacted me similarly around, in those situations. We've talked to them here in the podcast. They've spoken about it. And what I was struck by the figures that I was looking at from the RTB were that, two-thirds of the notices to quit that have been served are outside Dublin. That this isn't just a Dublin crisis. No. This is something happening across the country. And in particular, there's the HAP report, again, the Chief looked at in terms of, what property was available. It was around the country that there was nothing available for people to rent.
Yeah. Like if you're in Galway now, you're in there. I know my colleagues in Galway, Simon, have seen a very significant increase in their prevention services in 2021. They've already worked with more people, like 3 months ago, they'd worked with more people than they did in the entirety of 2020. So, it is ramping up and they really are seeing the impact of it. And that's true around the country. That's true in the Northwest. Marion Harkin is one of the sponsors of the bill. And, people don't think, and if you look at the official numbers, you don't think there's any homelessness in Donegal.
No.
But there's two things to bear in mind there. One is the level of hidden homelessness that is there. That we don't see people sleeping in cars, that kind of stuff. And the other thing is what's coming down the line there is the MICA. There's a number of, social housing units that are MICA affected. And where are those people going to go in the absence of any private rental that they can move into? So it's a real, the ongoing crisis and the what I call the perfect storm. When I called it a perfect storm 4 months ago, when during the summer, as we came out into it, and it really seems that's before I knew anything really about the full context of MICA. So
it is. And listen, if people want to support your call for the bill to be put through, this bill which would require that intervention, as you say, if somebody or a family is at risk of homelessness and being evicted, they can go on to the simon.ie website and sign the petition, which would go to
it's actually an email tool, so they can email their local TD. All they need to know is what their constituency is, and just fill out the details. We've sort of a pre-filled letter that people can send, but they can amend it and put their own voice to it if that's what they want to do. You just go to simon.ie, and if you want to go to simon.ie/take-action, that'll bring you straight to it, and you just fill in your details, and then you can send the TD both to the minister and to your local TDs. And if people are willing to do that, that would be great, because we can be quite cynical about politics, but if they are contacted by their constituents, even if it's only a couple of emails, it really does have an impact. We can't forget, lose sight of the fact that the TDs are, at the end of the day, they're public servants. And if you can show them, one, that the public is behind what you want to do, and two, that it will be an act for good, it's very hard for them to turn away from it.
Yeah, no, it is about all. It is all about making this a political priority that they see that the public is behind this. Listen, Wayne, thanks so much for joining me on Reboot. I know you have to go to a meeting, so really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks a million, Rory. Thanks for having us on.
And we'll talk to you again, Wayne. Thanks. And now we're going to go to Alicia Neelan. Alicia is a journalist with the Dublin Inquirer, who listeners of Reboot Republic will be well familiar with. Has been doing a lot of work in highlighting the ongoing and homelessness crisis, in particular the deaths in homeless services, but also worked herself in homeless services. I won't say many years ago. I don't even have a clue when you worked in homeless services.
It was a long time ago.
We'll say it's a semi-medium long time ago. Listen, Alicia, you've been writing recently about the issue of deaths in homeless services. And what do you want to explain to our listeners? What's your sense of what's going on, what you've been finding out?
Yeah, so unfortunately, it looks like there is a definite increase in the number of people passing away in homeless services in the last couple of years. People might remember, like, summer of 2020, there was a lot of concern around deaths in homeless services. There was a sudden spike in deaths in homeless services, and a lot of reports of people dying, both on the streets, but mostly people who were living in hostels. The numbers are up again this year. I got figures from the DRHE, from the Homeless Executive in Dublin City Council, recently. And there just seems to be a disproportionate increase. It's kind of complicated because there's two ways of counting the number of homeless people who've died. So, but what we can see is basically it's double this year from what it was in 2019, just 2 years ago. Now, there's only about another 400 single homeless people in services compared to 2019, but the deaths have more than doubled, and we're not at the end of 2021 yet.
Yeah.
So there really is, since COVID, a sharp increase in the numbers of people dying. If you don't include people in long-term homeless accommodation, it was 26 in 2019, 48 last year, and 59 already this year, and this year's not over yet. And then there's more people as well living in long-term accommodation, some of which is supported housing and some of which is hostels.
Like, it's horrific to think about anybody, you know, passing away in homelessness services. It's just such an awful, awful way to go in terms of, you know, the lack of dignity, the lack of connection. And obviously services are doing their best for people, but, you know, you're not in your own home. You know, I assume people are isolated as well. It's just awful to think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's traumatic often for the other people in the services as well. You know, I suppose some people are in services where they'd have their own room. Some people are living in shared rooms with other people. One girl said to me at one stage that she felt she was extremely traumatized by waking up to find somebody else dead in the room.
Yeah, so, of course.
Like,
yeah.
There's a huge amount of stuff going on. We're trying to find out more about why it's increasing and what the causes of the deaths are. But unfortunately, there's a massive backlog in the coroner's inquests. So they haven't yet completed all their inquests for 2019. So we can't get really details or information about the cause of death. So it's causing, like, I suppose people are just wondering, is it to do with reduced access to counselling and addiction services since COVID? Like, I suppose a lot of those things were closed. Even NA meetings, AA meetings weren't going ahead. Counselling services were closed for face-to-face counselling. There's a lack of supports in some of the hostels, although the majority of the deaths are happening in hostels where there is support. There is also issues with people who don't meet the local connection criteria, maybe accessing supports. People who are not from Dublin may not be able to get into supported hostels and may actually also struggle to get into rehab facilities.
Okay.
And then the addictions and alcohol rehab facilities aren't really well regulated either. I mean, some of them are excellent, but some of them are, there is regulation required for that whole sector as well.
And is this... And I know we've talked to Cleananí Cailleag and the, you know, Inclusion Health team in St. James's, you know, who do incredible work in linking in and trying to provide health support to, you know, people who are homeless. When you refer there to, you know, services not being available, are we talking about people, you know, who are deciding themselves, you know, to end their life? Is this, you know, is it death by suicide? Do we know?
Yeah, some of it definitely is. One of the charities, one of the homeless charities, Novus, had said they contributed to the Department of Housing Committee this year in relation to this. And they had seen a big, sharp increase in deaths in their services as well.
Yeah.
And they were saying there was an increase of self-harm and suicidal ideation and suicide attempts as part of that. So that does seem to be part of the picture. And it could just be to do with COVID being really difficult for everybody. And then I suppose if your housing situation is really bad, it's just even worse for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I suppose people are coming under, people who are already suffering with their mental health are coming under even additional strain with the restrictions. That's, you know, that may well be part of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we don't actually know how many of them were people who took their own lives at the moment, because we just can't get that. We can't get that information at the moment, unfortunately. Yeah. So it is a big problem, the backlog with the coroner's inquest.
And the coroner's court doesn't declare death by suicide anyway, I don't think, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
So even if that is the cause, I don't think, now again, I could be correct on that. And
I'm not sure. I mean, I suppose there's one of the things that was said about it was that there's a need for, like in England, they have these adult safeguarding reviews.
Yeah.
So every time somebody dies in homeless services, there's a full investigation, not to kind of blame anybody. And everybody's made the point that it's really important not to try and blame anyone.
Yes, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For learning for the future so that, you know, you can prevent it happening again. And that
type of thing. Everybody working in homeless services are trying to do their best, you know, in terms of support. There's nobody. Yeah. But it absolutely is about, you know, trying to find out so you can avoid it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, absolutely everyone is like, nobody wants somebody to die in their service. That's for sure. But there is also different levels of risk management and I suppose support.
So you say they do
different hospitals as well.
So they do a follow-up report in the UK. Are you saying that not been done in Ireland?
Yeah, there's a huge, there's a full investigative process each time somebody dies in services. So there's a lot of stuff happening in the UK that wouldn't be happening here. I'd query how that would work if somebody's in a private hostel. I'm not sure how they would do such an in-depth investigation or if they would have enough to go on.
This is in the for-profit private hostels.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not sure how that would work unless there's a different social worker that's involved or something, because I just don't think they'd have enough information.
Yeah, because they're not providing support services and they're not involved.
Yeah, and they're not keeping case notes or anything. So I don't know what they'd base that on, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which again highlights the problem with that private for-profit provision of homeless services.
Yeah, potentially there could be, like, we need to get more information about whether some of these deaths could have been preventable.
Yeah.
If more supports were available or not. But according to the information we have, the 19 of this year's deaths, 19 of them were in hostels without support, and 35 were in the charity-run hostels where there is support. So, that would be probably because you tend to, if people do meet the criteria for a local connection, then the higher need people would tend to be placed in the supported hostels.
Yes, yes, I know what you mean.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
So, but you could have a lot of high need people also in the private hostels if they don't meet that local connection.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Which is a big problem.
So that could be. And then there was Louisa Santoro, the CEO of Mendicity Institute, had also raised the issue of accessing rehabilitation services as well, like alcohol and drugs rehabilitation services.
Yeah.
For people who are not, maybe who aren't entitled to social welfare here. For example, you could get EU nationals who are here perfectly legally, but they just can't get social welfare. And then they mightn't be entitled to actually even go into a lot of the rehabs. Now, Simon Community do run one for that accepts everybody, but a lot of them, you have to actually be getting a social welfare payment to access them.
Yeah, yeah.
So there could be issues there. So there's a whole load of stuff needs to be reviewed around how this is happening as well, you know.
And do you see what do you see that happening?
Like, she had a client that she wasn't able to get him into a rehabilitation facility because yes, she would have those type of clients all the time.
Yeah. And what do you see then in terms of like your, you know, researching and trying to, you know, find out about this? And it's so important that you're doing this work because it's not getting attention anywhere else. Is it seen within homeless services by government? Is this something that has been looked at by the Department of Housing? Do you see, is this something of concern or is this just not on the radar?
No, I think it is. Dr. Austin O'Carroll has done a report on the deaths last year, but he's having the same problem in that the inquests haven't been completed.
So,
I think it is on the agenda. I think there is a concern. I mean, obviously, you know, it's like I was saying, nobody wants anyone to die in homeless services. Like, yes, nobody in the council or anywhere wants anyone to die in homeless services. Of course, they are concerned about it, but it's to try and get the information. I think, we were just talking about it today as well. I'm not sure if you can do an inquest into a death 3 years later because the relevant people may have forgotten a lot of the information. Like, human memory is obviously flawed.
So
the sooner you do the inquest, the better. I think the Department of Justice needs to look at staffing the coroner better if that's the length of time people are waiting for inquests. Like.
No, it's really, it's just, again, it's back to, of course, you know, what Wayne was saying and what we say all the time, you know, that all these problems are associated because we don't bloody build, we're not building homes for people and people are in homelessness. And, you know, again, Clean and Nicalig and the research shows that, you know, people who are homeless, their life expectancy is so much lower because of, you know, the insecure housing, you know, health related issues. Like, it's, you know, your health deteriorates, your physical, your mental well-being. So this is, in some ways, it's, you know, it's not surprising when people are, it shows this is what homelessness does.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's loads of complex issues involved. You know, a lot of people would have both addictions and mental health problems. And in those cases, you know, if you're dual diagnosis, there are no services. Like, services don't work with people who have both addictions and mental health. So it goes way beyond homeless services and well into the whole area of mental health services.
And
addiction services and the overlap between the two. And there's a huge problem there as well. Like, I suppose, you know, if you were to dig into these, into people's histories that are dying really before their time in homeless services, there could be a history of state care. There could be numerous different complex things that contribute to this, if you know what I mean. And then compounded by the experience of being homeless, because, you know, whatever chance you have of recovering, if you have somewhere to live that's stable, if you don't even have that, it's much, much harder to move on, I think.
And of course, as well, what people, you know, who are in homelessness talk about, and that there's that whole issue of, you know, the hostels, you know, the lack of safety within hostels, the issue of drugs been taken in hostels. They, you know, it's off, you know, people, you know, you're, as you say, you know, four or five people in a room, you know, if you're already suffering from, you know, mental health or addiction, these are factors that make you, you know, much worse. And that RT primetime program showed that, I can't take the statistic off the top of my head, but it was, I can't remember, but it was definitely, there was a significant increase in people who hadn't been taking drugs before homeless. Then when they were in homelessness, there was like a two or threefold increase in the proportion who were taking drugs. Like, this is, you know, this again, this is what homelessness does.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But also, people who don't take drugs shouldn't be placed in hostels with people who do. And that's basic best practice in general that we have abandoned. For some reason in Dublin, they have stopped putting, and homeless people actually say this to me all the time because a lot of them remember that it used to be more divided. And that there used to be more drug-free hostels and more hostels that were specifically for drinkers and all that stuff. And so they actually say this all the time. They're like, why did they stop doing that? That was so much better of a system. And it is best practice to divide people up. It's not best practice to have young people coming out of state care, 18, 19, have never touched drugs in their life, and placing them in adult homeless services with injecting drug users in their room. Like, that's not a good way of doing things. And that is how it's being done here. So there is massive issues with quality. There's no standards in place, as we know, for the private hostels, which is the majority of single beds now in the system. There's no standards at all in place.
There's no standards.
And there's no inspections.
No standards, no inspections.
No, nothing.
HIC was not involved.
No, well, HIC was not involved in regulating any of the hostels, but the charities have some standards that they do apply, and they have some risk assessments and supports that they provide in all their hostels. They would have staff training, safeguarding in place, and they'd have guard the vetting in place for their staff. When you go to look at the private hostels, it just appears to be the wild, wild west. I'm not sure why they've done
this. The majority of homeless services, home emergency accommodation, is provided by for-profit private companies, businesses, and they have there's no regulation of what they're providing.
No, there's no standards at all in place. Dublin City Council inspection of the private hostels is like a building check that you would do in a bar at the end of the night, like make sure that there's nothing blocking the fire escapes kind of thing. It's a building check, effectively. And there's no other inspections or standards. There's no standards being met. They're not vetting their staff, nothing like that.
I thought there would have been a minimal that the Dublin City Council, Dublin Homeless Region Executive, would be monitoring or have some requirement of companies to show staff are vetted, that these are the procedures in place, that this is what they do.
No, the standards for the sector are being applied in the charity hostels. They're not being applied in the private hostels.
That's incredible. So we've some of the most vulnerable people in the country with zero monitoring of their conditions or welfare, and the state is paying for them to be accommodated in services that there's zero checks.
Yeah.
That's just utterly disgraceful.
Yeah, it is. And it's just very strange that it has I don't know why the Dublin City Council has contracted so many of these private providers. They appear to have kind of switched switched the model around 2018. And stopped giving new contracts to the social care providers in favour of the private providers. And I mean, they did say at one point that the reason was because it was good to have increased competition in the sector. I guess, like, yeah, increased competition is brilliant if you can benefit from it. So, like, you go to change your mobile phone provider, you're happy there's lots of mobile phone providers.
This is not phones and cars.
Well, homeless people can't choose the hostel, so it's not. They can't benefit from increased competition. So I'm not sure who does benefit then from increased competition or what exactly that means.
But I would have thought at a minimum, I understood HICWA wasn't involved, but I would have thought at a minimum that Dublin City Council, the Dublin Homeless Regional Executive, would have had some sort of requirements, regulations in place for the contract they give to a company in terms of services provided, in terms of basic standards that staff would be Garda vetted. And
no, they're not Garda vetting staff, and at least 10 of them had no fire certs, so they're not meeting any basic requirements in the private hostels at all.
Yeah, that's just, and they're not done about that. That's like a minimum government city council should be requiring that they are meeting certain standards that it's setting.
Well, yeah, I mean, so basically they said for a long time that the National Quality Standards Framework did apply in the private hostels, but now they've moved on from that because it doesn't. The latest thing they've said is that they're going to rewrite the standards. So they're going to draw up a whole new set of standards. So instead of bringing the hostels up to scratch, they're going to rewrite the standards to fit the lower standards in the private hostels.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's utter outsourcing, privatization of care that is, you know, and the fact that it's not just the outsourcing, it's the failure to put in place any sense of standards at all. And like, have we not learned from our various abuses within institutions and what potentially is going on in people who are being paid by the state?
We're hearing some really concerning kind of complaints and allegations about staff in private hostels that we would never hear. Like, people give out about charity hostels, but they usually give out about what the other service users are doing and that the staff aren't controlling it enough.
Yeah.
But complaints about bullying by staff, we're only hearing that in relation to private hostels. We're not hearing that in relation to charity hostels. Yeah. You know, I have written about it before, and a lot of people would say stuff off the record that they don't want to go on the record because they're still living in these hostels. And they can be evicted there and then. There's no appeals process either if they get put out of a private hostel. So they're quite vulnerable. They can't really speak out a lot, but they do say things, and there are very serious allegations of, you know, bullying by staff, which you wouldn't hear about a charity hostel, really.
Yeah. Well, again, listen, Leisha, it's something that, you know, it's great you're continuing to highlight it, and really, you know, it is, I really appreciate that. And I know listeners do as well, and people, it's something that has to continue to be highlighted, that area. And, you know, I just think it's just so wrong. Like, they're human beings.
Yeah, it's a very strange setup. I don't really understand where they're going with it, or what. I just don't really understand why the council did it in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to figure out. But the point is, it needs to be changed now, and, you know, standards put in place and actively monitored. Well, listen, thank you very much again for joining me on Reboot and for joining us. And yeah, you know, you are doing incredible work in the Dublin Inquirer. People can check it out and they can subscribe.
Yes, exactly. We're surviving on our subscribers, so please do subscribe. And let us know if you have stories as well.
Yeah.
So we're always open to talking to people as well. Anybody who might work in hostels or have been in hostels or anything like that, we're always open to talk to people as well.
Yeah, no, it's important work, really important work and highlighting. And listen, thank you so much. And I'm going to finish up the podcast now by reading my article from the Examiner today, and which is calling for a 6-month eviction ban to be reintroduced in terms of the pandemic and also terms of the eviction sort of tsunami that's going on right now. So I'll read that now. So this is the article that I wrote. A 6-month eviction ban would bring security and relief to the almost 1 million people living in private rental accommodation and would reduce homelessness. Home is our most fundamental of human needs. It provides a place of shelter from our inclement weather, for rest, for children to grow and develop. At Christmas, more than any other time, home is the center of our hearts and lives. We decorate it and prepare for Christmas Day. It is a time when families gather together, perhaps having not seen each other for years. It is filled with magical memories of childhood, and although it can be a time of heightened stress in families and sadness with recent loss, it is the most special of times. That is why it is traumatic to be without a home at Christmas, and we rightfully put attention on those without a home at this time of year. It is heartbreaking that thousands of children and their families will spend Christmas in homeless accommodation. Some 2,513 children and their families are homeless across the country, equivalent to the number of children in an average-sized Irish town. This is a failure of our state that we should not accept. While the new COVID-19 Omicron variant has emerged, children and their families are still being served notices to quit by their landlord and will have to leave their home in the coming weeks. While most children are bursting with excitement about waking up on Christmas morning, these children and their parents are filled with worry and anxiety about having to leave their home and with no idea of where they will go. They are gathering together a few possessions and could have to go into emergency accommodation, sharing spaces with multiple other families, back into overcrowding with friends or family, or sleeping in their car. This loss of their home is a trauma that is an adverse childhood experience with potential lifelong detrimental impacts. It is also putting them at greater risk of contracting and spreading COVID-19. Nationally, there has been an 18% increase in the number of children in homeless accommodation since July this year, with a 25% increase across the southeast and southwest. That is a shocking level of increase and requires urgent intervention. Since COVID-19 emerged last year, 2 temporary moratoriums on evictions in the private rental sector were introduced, which prevented any notices of termination being served by landlords in all but limited cases such as antisocial behaviour. Both eviction bans led to a significant drop in evictions and homelessness. This is the last week the Dáil sits before Christmas, so the Minister for Housing should take the opportunity to reintroduce a temporary 6-month moratorium on evictions in the private rental sector up to June next year. Evictions in the private rental sector are the principal cause of homelessness, and these increased significantly this year after the ending of the moratorium in April. Some 90% of evictions are no-fault evictions. That is, the tenant did nothing to warrant an eviction. And the reasons for the eviction included the landlord deciding to sell the property, move a family member into the house, or refurbish. The ministers claimed that legislation passed last week addressed long-term security of tenure was misleading. The legislation left in place no-fault evictions, which means a landlord can still end a tenancy at any point, for reasons including sale of the property. While these measures for landlords exist, there is no real security of tenure. Over 2,000 notices to quit were issued to tenants so far this year, and this is likely to reach 3,000 by year end. That is a 50% increase in evictions on last year. The eviction ban in March 2020 meant notices fell dramatically by 83% in the second quarter of 2020 and fell again in the first quarter this year due to the October 2020 moratorium. However, this ban was removed in April and eviction notices doubled from 352 in the first quarter this year to 841 in the second quarter and reached 887 in the third quarter. Two-thirds of eviction notices were issued to tenants outside of Dublin, showing the crisis is affecting tenants in towns, cities and rural areas across the country. Threshold, the tenants' housing charity, has dealt with almost 4,000 eviction cases this year. This is about 1,000 cases higher than the Residential Tenancies Board figures, which suggests a significant number of landlords failed to register their eviction notice with the RTB, as is legally required. The true figures of eviction are therefore likely to be even higher than the alarming RTB figures. This huge number of evictions, coupled with the unprecedented shortage of available rental property, means people losing their rental home have nowhere to go. While there is limited supply of expensive build-to-rents, there's no supply of affordable rental properties. The Simon Communities found that in Cork City, Galway, Limerick, Sligo and Waterford, there was not one property available to rent in the affordability range of someone on a low income and eligible for social housing support. There's no reason why another temporary six-month moratorium on evictions cannot be reintroduced. The constitutional protection of private property was not a barrier to the previous two temporary moratoriums and therefore cannot be cited as a barrier to another temporary ban of a similar timeframe. A six-month eviction ban will not deter supply either. In fact, it will increase the supply of rental homes by maintaining this tenants in situ, postponing sales of the properties and thus maintaining more properties in the private rental sector for an additional 6 months. Many people feel frustrated and powerless to do something about homelessness. They can make a difference by donating to charities, but also by raising their voice and contacting their local TD today to introduce a six-month moratorium on evictions and implement the sensible homeless prevention measure proposed by the Simon Communities of a three-month extension to eviction notice periods where a tenant is certified at risk of homelessness. The 2020 eviction moratoriums worked. They banned most evictions and as a result significantly reduced the numbers being made homeless. So if we know what can stop people being made homeless, why are we not doing it, particularly at Christmas time and during a raging global pandemic? With one in five Irish families living in the private rental sector, a six-month eviction ban would give almost 1 million people real security and relief for at least 6 months, as they currently live with worry about the landlord issuing an eviction notice. That would be a decent Christmas present for those facing eviction and all renters who have borne the brunt of the housing crisis. That's the article I wrote for the Examiner today, and hopefully it will get some impact, and hopefully the Simon Communities measure will be implemented and we get a temporary six-month eviction ban that would at least postpone and give people some relief and postpone the evictions. There is a real need for it, as I've outlined. So if you can, contact your TD, contact your local TD, your politician or the Minister for Housing, and ask them to implement the temporary six-month eviction ban and the Simon Communities Amendment to protect those at risk of homelessness. And reminder again, if you can, to donate to Simon Communities, go over to simon.ie, support them, doing fantastic work. And we will continue to highlight the issue of homelessness and what can be done. And thanks, my thanks to Wayne Stanley for joining me today from the Simon Communities and to Leisha Nealon from the Dublin Inquirer. Thank you all for listening. Please share the podcast around if you can. Send it on to your friends, share it around on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Let people know that you're listening. Let's get the word out there. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And we will talk to you all soon.